meeting is now being recorded.
Okay, so welcome to IDN Guidelines Working Group call on 2nd of February 2017. We have Mats, Dennis, Jian, Carl, Satish, and Sarmad on the call. Over to you, Mats.
Thank you. I suggest that we let Carl go through his updated version. Is that incorporated so much?
Yes, that's incorporated. I'll scroll down to the relevant section. Okay, I'll zoom in a bit as well.
Carl, please walk through, comment the changes.
Yeah, thank you, Matt. After the meeting last week, I decided I would look at RFC 7940 just to see the exact usage of domain name, domain, and label, which were, I think, the three phrases that were most contentious last week. And assuming that, of course, domain and domain name are interchangeable, I've stuck with domain name. So that leaves us with domain name and label. And the terminology in 7940 was not conclusive. Certainly there's no explicit statement to explain why a domain name or label might be used in any given instruction. But where a string is being spoken about and evaluated and maybe even the result of a process, label is always used, and I think that's consistent with most of our understandings anyway. Where a registered object is referred to, domain name is generally used. There were a few exceptions, and I would say that it was in some cases interchangeable, but domain name did seem to be used predominantly where a registered name was referred to. That is the registered object that appears in the SRS. And label was generally referred to when referring to the evaluated thing, the string that was being evaluated or generated. So I've tried to maintain that usage here. I should note, though, that the rest of the document is not that rigorous. So we ourselves have not adhered to any particular methodology on that. So we may need to go and update the rest of the document if that is a strict discipline we're going to hold ourselves to. But for now, I'll just take you through this and we can decide whether that's what we want to do. So in the first line there, I've referred to domain name labels because we are referring to specifically the thing that or the strings that may not conform to these guidelines. But generally for the rest of the document, it will be either a domain name or a label, depending on exactly we're referring to.
What is the first line you're referring to?
Oh, sorry, 13. So if you look at item 13, TLD registries with existing registered domain name labels, and I deliberately chose domain name labels in that instance because I felt it made more sense or was clearer. And because we're referring to the string that's being evaluated rather than the domain name itself, the registered object. So moving on to A, where we see registered domain names here, and that is deliberate choice because we're referring to the registered object or currently activated variant labels. And so that's the distinction I've used. When we're referring to the registered object, it's the domain name. When we're referring to derived or other evaluated strings, it's labels. So, and that this type of phrase is repeated. Domain names are all currently activated variant labels. And the same in B, where I refer to non-conforming registered domain names or their activated variant labels. If that kind of phrasing is a bit wordy or difficult to follow, we might want to have a shorthand or a simple phrase that covers both. But for now, that was the most precise, and I think that matches what we were discussing last week. And it does follow what RFC 7940 seems to have used. And again, I repeat that I'm not entirely sure that 7940 was made a conscious decision to use that phrasing. But if someone understands 7940, they should be able to understand this text. So at the very least, they're the same. So B, and the first dot point there, I, you'll see that I'm referring to the life cycle of the domain name. In this case, because it is the registered object, there's no reason to refer to the label at all. It is just the domain name. So I think that follows on with our discussion last week and maintains that distinction. Point two there, so II, include restrictions on the activation or usage of variant labels. Given that that's the topic of that point, I think it's appropriate that we refer to the variant labels, and they've consistently referred to that throughout this recommendation, rather than domain names. Point three, clearly state whether the continuing publication in the zone file of non-conforming domain names or their variant labels will cease after a period of time. At this point, I'm not using domain name in this sense. Seems most sensible simply because of consistency, but in actual fact, we could have said original variant, original label and variant label, which is a term taken from 7940. Given that that phrase doesn't appear anywhere else in these guidelines, I felt that it was actually just more clearer to refer to the domain name, even though that's in the zone file, you're actually talking about the string rather than the registered object. But it did seem more straightforward and easy to understand. The point underneath that, so point one, if publication of non-conforming domain names or their variant labels into the zone file will cease, then clearly state the date at which they will be removed from the zone file. So that phrasing there repeats the phrasing from above and the phrasing from the earlier points, domain names or their variant labels. And I don't think... Oh, the only other change I made was the reference to, in section D, where we encourage registrars to notify registrants of non-conforming registered domain names. We could get, and you'll see at the very end there, it says which may, conditions which may apply to domain names or their variant labels, which is describing the affected strings. I think to say that twice within the same sentence would make it almost unreadable, so. I left it as registered domain names because that's the affected object, and then the conditions which apply to both the domain names and their variant labels. So from that point of view, I think it the message is clear. And once again, I should emphasize that the rest of the document is not as thorough in its terminology, so we can agonize over the text here, but I'm not convinced that we'll probably add much more value to this guideline if we do, unless we are to apply a similar level of rigor to the whole document. And that's certainly a level of work that I don't think anyone wants to undertake.
Thank you very much, Carl. I think it's very valuable because I think the text becomes so much clearer when you don't have a change of terminology, instead have a consistent terminology. Now, I think that we should take this as a model for the rest of the text. Anyone else have a comment on both the result and the ambition to have the same ambition for the rest of the text?
If I could just comment on Satish's he reads that it is an important distinction between these domain names, original labels, variant labels. I agree that we should define and consistently use these. I'll just make an observation in preparing to make these changes. I did some research, and I'll admit that it wasn't maybe as thorough as some others might be able to conduct, but I've been involved in the IDN industry or in the domain name industry for some time, and I intuitively understand the difference where label or domain name is used, but I not find a clear distinction or a written distinction, and I think the two seem to have derived from different sources, and now they've collided within IDN descriptions, and so they are occasionally used interchangeably, especially when you're talking about something that ends up in the zone file. I think the distinction is much clearer when you're referring to an algorithm that's assessing a string. In those cases, such as 7940, a label is pretty much always used when they're describing a rule or an outcome that results in a string. But when we're talking about something that moves from the registry into the zone file, the use of label and domain name does tend to be almost interchangeable. So I have not found a good, in fact, any text that explicitly defines these terms. So if someone is aware, I'd be very interested to take that on board. Otherwise, I think we're left to our own interpretation and just maybe we add this to the glossary terms.
I think I've seen a definition of label being what you find between the dots. And that is the way I use the term label. So that the domain name is built of label.
And I think, as I said earlier, I think everyone understands at the very edges or at the extreme ends what a domain name or a label is. Where I've noticed it becomes a little bit blurred is in the description between registry and the zone file. And given that that is often the manner in which registry operators police, valid and invalid names, that's actually the area that we're talking about, and unfortunately, it seems to be the most grey. So when we're referring to something that goes into a zone file, occasionally it's a domain name, and occasionally it's a label. Now, I see Dennis is typing something.
Yes. Dennis, you may speak if you want. So he writes, one idea is to use the main name across. From the point of view of user, both the main name and activated variant label are domain names in the two will resolve.
I think that's a That's a good point, but and it's something that occurred to me. The reason I haven't done that is because this document is targeted at registry operators, and there is a distinction in our guidelines and a registry might behave between a registered name and what appears in the zone file. And especially since we're talking about potentially policing a non-conformant label by removing it from the zone file, the domain name still exists, but the label itself may not enter the zone file at all. So it might still be important to, and especially when you're talking about variants as well, they might not be activated or even available. They might simply be blocked, in which case they're not true domain names and not manageable. So if I think it might actually make things more difficult in terms of providing clear guidelines to registry operators if we were to use a single phrase across everything. But I think under many circumstances it might be fine. So we would probably have to test the individual recommendation or the individual guideline that we're talking about when we come to it, to see whether using a consistent name like domain names is valuable, or whether using or labels is more useful. Because I could imagine when we're talking about variants, for example, it will be very useful to talk about labels over domain names, but in other topics, maybe not. Oh, I see Dennis has got his hand up. Go ahead.
Let Dennis come in. He has raised his hand. Please, Dennis.
Thank you. So I just want to go back to what Cal's observation, and I think maybe this is nuance, but it looks like, it seems to me that, and it's been, I mean, I have to be honest, it's been quite a while since I look at a SOM file. But what I think it's in the SOM file, it's a domain name, meaning the record states the second level label and the TLD. So it's a domain name and not just a label. And looks like, and so I believe that's true. That I look like you are using the term body and label to just refer to the label, right? Just the second level label, and that's something that would be in the SOM file itself, where I think it's going to be label and TLD both together.
Thank you, Dennis. No, I think I understand what you're asking and what you're getting at. I was actually looking at it from a slightly different point of view, because what we're suggesting here is the policing of the registry. I felt it was actually much more important to be clear about what's in the registry, what's derived from the object within the registry, and then what ends up in the TLD. So you're correct, everything in the zone file is a domain name. To be precise, it's a domain. That would include an activated variant. So from that point of view, everything would be a domain name. But I thought it was important to offer a distinction between the registered object, which has a life cycle inside the registry, and any derived strings within the registry, which may or may not be activated. So then, where I refer to the activated label, that means it's in the TLD zone file, and that's using the terminology as it's come from the registry agreement. So the phrase there was that's used is activated, which means it appears in the zone file. So I've avoided repeating the use of domain name simply for clarity. If it's not clear, then maybe we could just stick with variant domain names. But my fear is if we use variant domain names for all the phrasing, then when we get to talking more about variants in our later sections, we won't be using the same terminology as RFC 7940.
Well, I mean, you could argue that, yeah, you could argue that when you talk about labels, you kind of work, or talk about variants, you kind of only work on the label. I mean, one label is replaced by another as a variant, and I see a value of the doing as you have done, Carl, to call that a variant label, even though it's a little bit confusing when you see that it's actually a domain name too when it comes into the zone file. Or the question is, does it have to be in the zone file to be a domain name? Because things could be registered in the database without being in the zone file. Some TLDs permit that. Are those the domain names? What do you think, Carl? Because I think we're talking about two domain names.
Certainly our usage, and now I'm talking about Neustar as a registry operator, software developer, not necessarily consistent across every operator and developer, but certainly our usage and the usage I've often used to colleagues in the industry is that the domain name or the thing that is registered by the registrant is a domain name. The variants that are generated on that domain name will have different terms, and I don't think there's been a consistent one, which is why I think 7940 is a little bit unique in that it does tend to be a little bit more consistent, and which is why I'm trying to maintain that consistency here. But I emphasize that it's not common across the industry because we have regularly swapped and changed when we refer to variants. There's lots of documents out there that refer to variant domain names, and there's almost as many, I think, that are referring to variant labels. The only reason I've gone for variant labels is because the more recent document, 7940, does use variant labels quite specifically. So I thought if they're using it and if we use it, then we might start to establish some form of consistency. But I emphasize that I have no particular authority here or history or knowledge. I'm simply copying what a previous document has done. In the interests of keeping things or establishing some kind of norm.
But my question, do you think that it's only a domain name when it's in the UNAT?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, it's definitely a domain name in the registry. Or at least that's been our usage in the registry operators that I've dealt with.
And do you make a distinction between a domain name and a domain?
No, or not one that's important. A domain name or a domain is, at least in the terms of the registry, is I've never experienced any important difference in that phrase. But again, that's just Neustar and ARI experience. It might be different for other registry operators.
Dennis, do you still want to change the terminology from the one that Carl suggested?
No, I think I'm okay. I think. Also, yes, to add where I was coming from is that we are not drawing the distinction between the mailing and variant label as to suggest a way to implement the whole activation of variants is going to be up to the registry operator whether variant domain names are activated as a child object, if you will, or independent domain names, right? Each one with its own life cycle. But of course, variant labels are going to be subject to a original domain name, if you will, right? So that we keep with all the domain names and the variants are kept under the single registrant. But we're not suggesting that this is going to be a parent-child relationship, but maybe it's a bundle kind of thing. So that's going to be up to the registry operator to decide how to implement.
Just to clarify, this particular section is not suggesting one way or another. If the registry operator chose to break them apart or not, then that's entirely up to them. The only guideline or guidance this section provides is that if you choose to do that, you need to account for it in your registry or in your registration policies, and you need to publish those. So effectively, what all this long text is saying is whatever you choose to do, and especially whatever you choose to do if you've got names that don't that are somehow invalidated or non-conformant with these guidelines, you must tell people and you must be clear about what you're planning on doing. So that's effectively what this particular section is. It's a request to tell everyone what your plans are. The reason I'm hesitating a little bit is because I suspect when we get to the later sections, when we're talking about suggestions for variants, the whole concept of bundling and whether or not to will be discussed. So I think we can have that discussion later, but certainly this section is not covering that at all. No matter what someone does, just tell the registrar and make it all clear. That's pretty much the general advice here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that we have agreed on the terminology that you have suggested, Carl. And I think that we also have agreed to try to use this consistently. I have one question, and that is, if this is a long text, and I don't say that we should do it now, but maybe we should bring it up. Do you think that's possible, Carl? Probably you say no.
I think we can certainly break it up. It's already in individual chunks.
Sorry, the subscriber you dialed is using call. Holding surveys. Please hold on. 您通话的客
Looks like someone giving us a party line. Fantastic. I think we can certainly break it up and perhaps separate it using headings, or perhaps make the sections A, B, C, and D have a title or something like that to make it a little bit more readable. That might be an option, depending on how we structure the rest of the document.
Mm. Right. I don't say that we should do it now, but I think that we should try to break it up.
Yep. Okay.
The text before this item 13, that was not written by you. it would break my admin, I guess. And is this connected or?
No, I don't think so. And perhaps Samad can elaborate on this, but I think recommendation 13 just came because it was next. I think I don't think the two are associated
right.
at all.
This is Samad. So the text before 13 is a separate recommendation on automatic activation, which Edmund had suggested, but we've not discussed that for some time. We discussed it and suggested some revisions, but I think that still is pending. So that's totally something separate from what we were discussing right now.
Okay, I think we should discuss that with Edmund. It's definitely and not trivial to talk about automatic delegation. But let's postpone that until Edmund is here, or maybe next time. So thank you very much, Carl, for the work. And Samad, I saw that you were starting typing something. Do you want to comment the call text or something in relation to the discussion?
No, it's okay. I think that's already addressed. So nothing
okay.
further from me to add.
Well, let's scroll down. We have the text that was discussed several times. Please help me to remember how far have we actually gone through this text. Dennis, you have been involved in writing this. So
just to give everybody an update, we discussed this last time, and initially we had a longer recommendation in the first part, the commingling of cross-script code points. As per previous discussion, that was broken into two parts, the first paragraph and the last paragraph. The last paragraph is new, which is trying to capture the last bit of the first paragraph, which has been taken out from the original recommendation 5 from version 3. The second and third paragraphs, we discussed second paragraph, but we were still not made a final conclusion on it, and we still have to discuss the third paragraph.
So let's take the second paragraph then. Anyone that wants to make a comment on that? Maybe Dennis, who's been involved in writing this text.
Right. So just because it's been quite some time that we discuss this, just to level set the other members of the group. So the second paragraph addresses the use case where we have, and we're talking about harmonization of valiant rules across JavaScript IDM tables. So this is the case where a registry operator may have or has different language tables based on the same script. So how to address the rules, valiant rules across these tables so that they ensure they have the same rules so that it accounts for symmetry and transitivity properties across code points. So if I read the recommendation by parts, it says TLD registries will ensure that all applicable same script identifiers with a variant policy have uniform variant rules that properly account for symmetry and transitivity properties of all variant sets. So this is addresses the first sub-use case on these same script IDN tables. You have a language tables, each with different variant rules. The ratio builder will have to make sure that all symmetry and transitivity properties are accounted for, even if code points do not belong to a specific language table. Just to make sure the transitivity rule applies across the board. Of course, there are exceptions as allowed in some of the, I believe it's an RFC. Sarma, could you zoom out so that I can read the comment boxes, because I think I put some background information in there. Thank you. I think, yeah, there you go. Yeah, exceptions. Oh, yeah, so, yeah, per the Freytag Liger variant rules, section 2 variant relationships, standard or internet draft talks about certain exceptions that may exist, so that's what I'm accounting for exceptions there. The third part of the recommendation is the sub-use case when a ratio operator has a one language table with no variant rules because there is no need to account for any of those cases, but introduces a second language table after the fact. Now because this ratio operator has two language tables, there are going to be code points in these tables that should have a variant rule. So even though none of the language tables have variant rules, the ratio operator has to reevaluate the variant relationship between these two tables and come up with certain policy across those. I appreciate the use case and maybe the need to evaluate the variant rules at that point, I was struggling from a thinking about implementation. If I'm a registry operator, I may not have the language expertise. So I will try my best to find reliable sources in order to define the code point repertoire and the rules of these tables. So I think, and maybe I will not know that these two tables have to have a variant rule so that it accounts for symmetry or transitivity properties. So that's where I was struggling to, but so that's why I wrote the recommendation, but also just want to appreciate the implementation side of it, and I wanted to open up for the group to discuss. Maybe I'm just, my concern is not warranted, and at the end of the day, registrars won't have any issues in doing this work.
And can you read the statistics comment aloud and also comment it?
Okay, so Satish, should that be, that may require the creation of new variant sets? Oh, okay, so that, you know, was really whatever. Well, yeah, it's I guess semantics or grammar. English not my first language, so I think we're saying the same thing, but I mean, I will rely on somebody that is native English speakers to wordsmith the the text.
I think the text looks pretty good. I have the same comment as before we discussed last time, and that was the question of will versus must and should. And we came to the conclusion then that we should use must should instead of will. So we should change all the wills here to musts, I guess. What do you say? Dennis?
Maybe I'm wrong, but I think we didn't have a conclusion on how to use the language, and I think I recall we asked Sarma to reach out to previous IDN guidelines working group members in order to find out why the use of will was used in those previous versions, and I think there was some rationale written in version 2.2 of the guidelines as to the usage of this wording.
Carl has used must in his text. Carl is a native speaker. I don't know about Satish, but I'm not. Ahmad is not, and you are not. So, Carl, please, what do you say about will versus must or should?
I was actually about to write a comment saying that I do support the use of must and should, but not on the basis of grammar or, but simply to align with RFC 2119, and I think that the previous iterations of the guidelines have not been rigorously written, and that's not to denigrate the previous or those authors, but I think there had not been such a focus on the wording at the time, and it was more a genuine guideline in the true sense. Because we're moving into making this document a legal document, because it will form part of the contract for registry operators, I think it's now more important to actually use the terminologies as defined by 2119. And I see Sam has put his hand up, so maybe he might have something pertinent to add.
Yes. Before so much, does will here mean the same as must? Or how do you interpret will?
I think... The reason I want to emphasize 2119 is that must has a very distinct interpretation in RFCs when you use it. So if it's two people on the street, will is a little bit suggestive, whereas must is a more enforceable. Should, if you were to replace will with should in common parlance, I think it would be a little bit less suggestive than will, but in the usage that it finds in RFCs, it's a little bit different. So, which is why I'm emphasising the aligning with the RFC more than, say, colloquial grammar rules that we might have for English. I think it's actually more important that we have good, readable documents from an RFC alignment point of view than from a grammatical point of view, if that distinction makes
sense. Thank you, Carl. Samad, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that we had discussed this in last meeting as well, and while I listened again to that recording to do the minutes, and the decision in that meeting was that we'll use must and should and the RFC compliant, I guess, terminology, and send it out for public comment to see if there is any feedback from the community, in case, you know, if against those wording, and it was suggested that we explicitly call that out for the community to make sure that CCTLDs can also, operators can also comment on it. So that was just reiterating what was discussed last time. Thank you.
Thank you for reminding us, and that is my memory too. Dennis, can you accept that we go for must and should instead of using will?
That's what the majority of the group wants. Sure, certainly, I have no objection. I just want to note that. So a lot of focus is given to the fact that the registry operators have to follow this, and what I'm saying is the registry agreement already says that registry operators have to follow this, so this is a binding document, so use of mass or will, I think, in my opinion, is irrelevant. But we also have to think that this document we want as a group, right? We want this guidance to be adopted by non-registry operators outside the GTLD stage. So that's CCTLD and any registry that is handling IDN. So using a must and should may be a deterrent. And so that's why I just want to observe that. But again, if the group wants to go with the mass, I mean, with RFC 2119, I will update these, all the wheels with mass and maze with shoots or just maze. So, yeah.
But Dennis, we have the same situation with the RFCs too, that, I mean, they state must and should, and that they are not legally binding for most users. They can break the must in the RFCs. So I think that the audience of this document is familiar with the RFCs, and if they don't get upset by the must in the RFCs, they shouldn't get upset by the must in this document. So the must here means that to be compliant with these guidelines, you must. That is how it should be read. And we could state that in the beginning of the document. So I think that we have agreed to go for must and should in the document, and be consistent. Okay. We have 7 minutes left of the meeting time. Let's go to the next section. Dennis, you have worked with that, so please comment.
Yeah, thank you, but I see Sarma's hand up, so let's go first.
Okay, please, Sarma.
Thank you, Dennis Metz. So I just wanted to make that comment again, which I made last time, I guess in response to what Dennis said, suggested, that there is no reference, and I also again wanted to point out whether it's useful to point to root zone LGR as a possible reference. since it's a script level analysis, even though it may not cover all the possible cases, but it does cover many, if not most, of the cases. If that addresses the concern which Dennis was raising. Thank you.
And so in relation to what, Sarad? Is this section of JavaScript homoglyph?
No, it's about doing variant sets across different language tables to do, you know, a script level analysis to see what possible variants could be added if a new IDN table is introduced, for example, for a new language within the same script.
Okay. Yeah. So you suggest that we have a reference to the Wheatstone book in section two about harmonization of various views.
Well, so yes, the suggestion is that you know that is a possible reference if the group thinks that is useful and you know to address some of those practical limitations which Dennis was referring to. Though you know the recommendation is good enough as it is, but in case the working group considers that it is incomplete and it will help, that reference could be added. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I think it's a good point. I think that we should utilize the Wheatstone work as much as possible. So that's a good point. Yes, please, Dennis, you were interrupted.
No, that's okay. I think that's a good clarification, Sarma. And I think I agree. We should leverage Wheatstone work and the language reference work also for the second level as where possible. But I do hesitate to put them into the guidelines itself, and maybe we can find a place within the guidance document as an advisory for registry operators to use as sources for the other work because of the practical limitations that each of them may have. So I have to do two things, right? I have to change the words will with must and should or may according to the RFC 2119. And also I write something about how registries could use already existing work in the ICANN community to do this, to implement these guidelines. Yeah, and Sarma, I see your comment. It could be added as a footnote, and I will actually promote it from a footnote to a whole section, maybe advisory section, as far as references or sources. So yeah, I will come up with some suggested text. And so, I mean, Correct, exactly. So I was pointing that out. I was going to point out 3 minutes, and I don't think this will be enough time to go over the whole recommendation. So I would just suggest that we do this next week when we meet again.
Yeah, let's do that. I will not be able to participate the next meeting. I will have to read the notes, the minutes from the meeting. So, thank you very much, all of you. Yes, Armand, please.
Before we go, could I make a couple of quick comments?
Yes.
First of all, we're planning to organize a 90-minute or 75-minute session at ICANN 58 on behalf of the working group, like what we did at ICANN 57, where the working group presented the latest work version of the guidelines to the community. So I wanted to check with everybody on whether that we should confirm that. And also, I think we should, if we are going to present something to the community like last time, it may actually be a useful idea to have an updated version of the document sent out publicly. You know, if you are able to finish this document, that's great. But if you're not able to finish this document, then a clean version for the community we should probably send out, and we should probably send some timelines for that as well. So just wanted to point.
I think that we should present the material and also send out a version of this document, even if it's more preliminary. Anyone else? What do you say? Can you call Satish? What's your opinion about ICANN 58?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we should have a session to go over the work thus far and get feedback for sure. I mean, there's a big opportunity to get all the registry operators and registrars to chime in and get their comments so that we can incorporate that feedback moving forward. So, yes, I agree we should have a session.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another suggestion I wanted to share with you was that since we now actually have substantial new work beyond the previous version, would you want to do an interim draft formal public comment call, or do you still want to circulate it informally before ICANN 58?
So what would the difference be? It's an informal or formal?
Informal is normally circulated by us to whoever we know, but it doesn't really go out to the community. So the community may still not know about this, except those who come to the session. But a formal public comment means it really goes out to the whole community.
You think that... Right. So do you think that in practice that a formal public comment would get more comments, etc.?
I think it gets more visibility. It's up to us to really decide that. Obviously, just presenting it during the session, the reach to people who are at that session or at ICANN 58.
I think that if I understand Carl and Satish correct, both of them suggest that we do more informal. So let's postpone the decision next meeting. Is that okay, Samad?
Yes, of course. Even if you send it out for public comments, we still have to about 2 weeks at least before we decide.
Okay. Yeah. So let's discuss that next time, or you do without me. Okay. Thank you very much for this meeting. Talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.